Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. The next series of shows I'd like to embark upon is All Your Worth, The Ultimate Lifetime Money Plan, which I have spent time on years ago, but which I feel is something we need to revisit in light of the challenges in our economy. The book, All Your Worth, is by Elizabeth Warren, who most of you know about now. She is a senator from Massachusetts, the first female senator from that state, and she has been a very important person in dealing with many debt issues, credit card issues, and issues to help the middle class in particular at the governmental level in the last few years. But before that, as a writer and scholar, a professor at Harvard University. She has a number of books, and All Your Worth was written with her daughter, Amelia Warren Tiagi. What I will follow for the most part is her book, All Your Worth, as the textbook in this series. So, continuing where we left in the last show, we want to identify the negative thinking traps that may be preventing you from accomplishing all of your goals. Also, we want to learn how to assess the role that negative thinking traps play in your life. Banish them once and for all. That's it. Find the traps and get rid of them. Of course, this sounds simple, but the effect is incredibly powerful. If you believe that you are in control of your future and can get straight with your money, then there is no telling just how far you can go. We stand there ready to try something new, then bam, a trap you didn't even see grabs you by the leg and stops you dead in your tracks. You don't change anything, not because something happened in the real world, but because something happened in your head. A self-destructive belief, a negative thinking trap, takes hold and persuades you that you are destined to fail. According to Professor Warren, negative thinking traps develop a momentum of their own. Living with debt and fear can be a habit, rather like smoking or overeating. It's something you get used to, something you build into your daily routine. After a while, you begin to believe there is no other way. Even if there are material changes in your life, you get a raise, the babies grow up, you don't even notice that things could be better because you hold so tightly to the belief that failure and anxiety are an inevitable part of your life. It's time to identify your negative thinking traps. We're going to help you name your traps one by one. The amazing thing about this exercise is that so long as the traps stay carefully concealed in the shadows, they are powerful. You can't move for fear of getting caught. But once they are uncovered, once you can see them and poke at them a little bit, their power seems to fade away. After a while, they are nothing more than rusty reminders of an earlier life you have long since left behind. Now we're going to identify several of the most common negative thinking traps so that you can begin to uncover them, exposing them to the bright lights and ending their powerful hold. First one, all or nothing. I'll never stick to a budget. My credit is ruined, so why bother? I always carry a balance on my credit card. Never, always, forever. These are the hallmarks of all or nothing thinking. All or nothing thoughts add up to one thing. If I can't be perfect, there's no point in trying to be better. One little mistake, one little stumble, and it's all over but the weeping. Quit at the first misstep. Sounds familiar? Over the years, we have seen the concept of financial balance provoke an attack of all or nothing fatalism in otherwise reasonable people. I'll never cover my must-haves on half my income. I can't save $2, let alone reach 20%. Maybe you feel the same way. Maybe you looked at the 50-30-20 formula and you wanted to throw the whole thing against a wall and shout, "I can't do that." If that's how you're feeling, then listen very carefully, please. All you're worth is a system which is a lifetime plan. It is about moving toward a better place, no matter where you start. It's about seeing a clear goal while managing the ups and downs that are a part of every life. All you're worth is not all or nothing. Getting your money into perfect balance may not be possible for you, at least not right this minute. Maybe you signed a bunch of long-term contracts that you can't get out of. Maybe you are out of work. Maybe you have been robbed. We understand this. There may be real circumstances that prevent you from hitting the 50-30-20 goal immediately. What then? Remember your mother's advice. Just do your best. If you can't save 20%, can you save 15%? If you can't get your must-haves down to 50%, can you get them down to 55%? Getting your money in balance is one of those things where close really does count. If you can't get your money into perfect balance, get as close as you can. Consider one of Elizabeth Warren's clients, Ross Pennon. After this man added up all the numbers, Ross told her, "Nope, can't do it." Before she could say a word, he rushed ahead. He had to pay child support and rent was high, and he was at 58% on must-haves, and balance might work for other people but not for him. When he finally paused for a breath, she quietly asked, "Could you do 54%? Ross was clearly taken aback. "But I can't do 50%. She pushed back. "Try 54%. He resisted a little longer. "But it's supposed to be 50%. Eventually, he agreed to give it a try. Within 2 months, he had pulled his must-have expenses to 54%. More important, he trimmed his wants from 42% to a dead-on 30%, something he would never have tried if he had insisted on all or nothing. Now, after more than a decade of living paycheck to paycheck, he is socking away a steady 16% of his income every single month. She met with Ross a little over a year later. He was still somewhat combative, and his tendency for perfectionism hadn't disappeared. But there was a certain pride that hadn't been seen before. In short, he was able to see and admit that he had made progress. So think of it this way. If you can change a 60-40 zero budget to a 55-30-15 plan, you will be much better off. Granted, you won't be perfect, but you will start getting ahead each and every month. Moreover, with these kinds of numbers, in a few years, you will be in a better place than the overwhelming majority of Americans, and that will be something to be proud of. And we'll return to this after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you're listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Continuing on, the next point is money is too hard. 5 examples of that are, I don't understand finance. I'm no good at math. Money makes me nervous. My financial situation is just too complicated. Other people understand money better than I do. If you agreed with any of these statements, then you are telling yourself that money is too hard for you. There is a good reason to feel shaky about your money skills. A whole world out there is telling you that they get it and you don't. the business news networks chatter about stock futures and commodity indexes until it sounds like they are speaking Klingon. The financial page runs on about a dip in the exchange rate of the yen and a rise in euros as if everyone in the world knows what they're talking about. The unspoken message is always the same. Money is hard. At least, it's too hard for you. And maybe the people around you, even people you love very much, have given you the message that money is too hard for you. Women hear this all the time. In high school, in Elizabeth Warren's generation, they got steered into home economics while the boys took real economics. Fathers and husbands told them not to worry about money, that they would handle it. Of course, women are long past the days when they batted their eyelashes demurely while some man offered to take care of everything. But we all still hear lots of variations on the too hard for me theme from women and plenty of men. Amelia Tiagi says she was scheduled to appear on a local news channel and the station sent a camerawoman to film her at home. Lucy, the camerawoman, was smart and capable, the sort of in-charge person who gets things done. As they visited during setups and takedowns, Lucy started asking questions about money. She was an independent contractor, and her credit cards were in a tangle. After she ducked a couple of Amelia's pointed questions, Lucy laughed sheepishly and said, "You know, I'm just the artistic type. I can't really do numbers." Amelia watched her maneuver the camera for a few more minutes, and then she asked, "How do you figure out the right lighting for the shot?" Lucy launched into a complex explanation that left Amelia in the dust. At the third mention of an orange card and some kind of calibration, Amelia cried, "Wait, you know stuff that is really complicated. If you can hold down this job, you can straighten out your spending." Lucy laughed in surprise, but quickly resumed her, "I can't do it." But when the show was over, she asked if they could schedule a time to come back to work on her financial plan. The truth was, Lucy didn't need much hands-on help from Amelia. Once she had worked through the basics on her own, she was flying. She called a few weeks later to say thanks and remarked, "This isn't very hard, you know. You just have to be determined." And Lucy was right. Money isn't that hard. Getting straight with your money can be challenging in the sense that you may have to make some difficult choices and break some long-standing habits, but it isn't complicated. You don't have to be great at math. You don't have to understand a lot of specialized financial terms. You don't even have to like finance. Getting your money into balance is less about whether you're left-brained or right-brained and more about your willingness to put in some effort and stick with it. Take it from Professor Warren and Amelia Tiagi. Amelia received a degree in finance from one of the finest business schools in America. Elizabeth is a Harvard law professor who is now a senator who teaches business and commercial law when at Harvard to some of the smartest future lawyers in America. They know this kind of thing really well, and they want to tell you that you don't have to be a Wall Street whiz kid to make smart decisions with your money. Most of the complicated financial products, convoluted analyses, and 20-letter words you hear on the business channel are important to people who are trying to run giant companies and maybe to a few multi-zillionaires. But all that jargon and all those complicated calculations aren't particularly relevant for a typical hard-working person who just wants to take control of her money and build some wealth. Knowing the ins and outs of advanced finance is a little like knowing how to speak Pashto. If you want to be the ambassador to Afghanistan, then speaking Pashto can be really important. But if you aren't planning any travel to that part of the world, you can live a rich, full life without speaking a single word of Pashto. The same general idea goes for money. If you still think money is too hard for you, then pause for a moment and probe exactly how helpless you are. Do you stand at the checkout line at the grocery store and pull out all your money and tell the clerk, "Gee, take whatever you want"? Do you see a sale for 30% off and think, "Hey, I wonder what that means"? Do you say to your employer, "Just pay me whatever you want. I can't tell the difference anyway"? Of course not. You stick up for yourself and make smart decisions every single day about money. Most of what you really need to know to get straight with your money is about as complicated as a trip to the grocery store. You need to be able to comparison shop so you can tell the difference between a good deal and a bad deal. You need to be able to do a little basic addition and subtraction, or punch numbers into a calculator, so you can figure out how much you are spending. You need to be able to make out a list and stick with it until you can get everything done. And you need to be able to ask a question in case there is something you can't find on your own. That's about it. So once more, you need to be able to comparison shop so you can tell the difference between a good deal and a bad deal. You need to be able to do a little basic addition and subtraction or punch numbers into a calculator so you can figure out how much you are spending. You need to be able to make out a list and stick with it until you get everything done. And you need to be able to ask a question in case there is something you can't find on your own. You don't need to know a lot of fancy new vocabulary words. You don't have to be a whiz at trigonometry. You sure as heck don't need to know the difference between equity swings and stock swaps. It's not complicated. And one more point about money competence. If a newscaster, an insurance agent, or even your beloved spouse ever makes you feel stupid about money, then all we can say is, they are wrong, not you. Turn off the TV, find a new agent, and tell your mate to treat you with the respect you deserve. Because, really and truly, if you are smart enough to earn it, you are more than smart enough to spend it wisely. Now the next section is finger pointing. Some examples of that are, my financial troubles are primarily the fault of my, who? Boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse, ex-spouse. Or, my basic obligations cost more than I can possibly afford. How about, my job doesn't pay enough for me to make ends meet. I'm not lucky about money matters. My ex doesn't pay enough support, or support takes too much out of my paycheck, so I can't be financially secure. Housing in this area is so expensive that I can never get my finances straightened out. And finally, my kids just cost too much. I'll never be able to get ahead. Well, maybe these statements are all true. Maybe your ex really is a jerk who doesn't make his support payments, and maybe a one-bedroom condo in your area really does cost more than the Hope Diamond. If that is reality, where is the trap? The trap is in the hidden message. You are telling yourself that you are off the hook. The financial problems you face are someone else's doing, and therefore it's all out of your hands. You're telling yourself there's nothing you can do. And if there is nothing you can do, then you have a free pass to sit on your duff. Finger pointing can become a vicious habit. Today it's housing prices. Tomorrow it's the kids. The next day it's because the grass is green and the sky is blue. Reason piled on reason, explaining why the problems are out of your control and why you shouldn't bother trying to fix them, is really the problem. The truth is that there will always be a reason why you can't balance your money. There will always be someone or something that you can point your finger at. And the reasons will always be good reasons. And yet, you know, and we all know, so long as you stay focused on why everyone and everything else is to blame, you will miss the opportunity to make things better yourself. Move past the finger pointing. Just give it up. Even if the reasons are true, it might really be true that your boss doesn't pay you what you deserve, that your ex is a first-class stinker, and that you get allergies from watching the Weather Channel on TV. But truth isn't the issue. Move past the blame because it isn't helpful. In fact, it is worse than not helpful. It is downright destructive. Success can't rain down on you so long as finger-pointing is your umbrella. And we'll continue with this in a moment. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now, how do you get beyond finger pointing? First, take a minute to get it out of your system. Tell your 4-year-old that it's high time she's got a job. Find an ad for a really overpriced condo and use it to clean up after the dog. Go in the closet and call your boss a penny-pinching slave driver, but not too loudly, of course. When you finish, say out loud, "Enough, I'm done with the blaming. This is useless and it hurts me." And then change the subject. Try substituting a sentence about something you can do to make your financial situation better. Your answer may be bold. "I'm going to look for a better paying job." Or modest. "Maybe the generic toilet paper isn't so bad." The point here is not to put pressure on yourself to solve all your problems in one bite. Just stop focusing on whatever you're pointing your finger at and get your focus back where it belongs, on yourself and what you plan to do. If you want to get straight with your money, then there are no free passes. There is no, "Oh well, there's nothing I can do." Because there is always something you can do. All your worth shows you some smart moves you may not have thought about. Maybe you can't make things perfect, but you can always make things better. The next thinking trap then is waiting for the money bunny. "As soon as I start making a little more money, everything will work out. I'm healthy, so I'll be fine without insurance. I figure my income will keep going up, so there's no reason for me to worry about the future. I can pay my debts anytime I want. It's not really a problem. I'm young. I don't need to worry about money yet. I'm not worried about saving for retirement. Something will work out. I don't want to think small by just saving a little bit at a time. I think a lot about winning the lottery." This is waiting for the money bunny. If only. If only you win the lottery. Sure, the odds are 1 in 7 million, but someone has to win, right? If only your no-good bum of an ex gets a great job and starts paying the child support on time, which is even less likely than winning the lottery. If only your crazy Uncle Travis had a bunch of stock certificates in the attic and he leaves them to you in his will, even though you haven't called him in 10 years. If only the Easter Bunny hides an IRA in the bushes and pays off the car loan while he's at it. We never see the Easter Bunny, but we sure love to sit back imagining all the candies and colored eggs he would soon drop off. There they would be, treats nestled all around just waiting for us to pick them up. Maybe you plan your financial life the same way, just waiting for something or someone to arrive with baskets of money that will shoo away any bad news. On the surface, it can sound so positive. You tell yourself that your fantasies and daydreams are just an expression of a sunny disposition. You say, "I believe in myself and my potential." Now, what could be wrong with that? Nothing, in small doses. A dash of optimism or a moment of idle daydreaming is perfectly fine. We're not too proud to admit that we've passed a few minutes here and there imagining what we would do if we got a gazillion bucks. The issue is not whether happy fantasies pass through your mind, but whether you let those fantasies guide your actions, or more to the point, guide you to inaction. Money fantasies can become another excuse not to act. If someone or something else is going to make your problems disappear, there's no need to do anything. Deep down, you probably know that your money fantasies aren't healthy, at least not when they stand between you and the progress you know you need to make. But when you're feeling nervous about your money, it can be so tempting and so comforting to spend your time fantasizing about winning the lottery instead of confronting stone-cold reality. If money fantasies are so alluring, how can you shoo them away? Remember what the Easter Bunny brought: extra treats. No one ever said you could count on the basics to come your way without some work and planning. So here's the way to keep the fantasies in perspective. Use them as extra treats. If you have been saving and then you win the lottery, throw a giant party and invite me. If your daughter becomes a star cellist and wins a big college scholarship, then celebrate and use her college fund to take a great cruise. And if you buy health insurance and never even catch the sniffles, count yourself as one of the luckiest people on the planet. In other words, if you want to live a better life, you have to agree to let the bunny bring the gumdrops while you supply the meat and potatoes. If you still find those money fantasies a little too attractive, just think about this. How much more comfortable would you be with a nice fat bank balance? How nice would life be if you knew that the ringing phone wasn't a bill collector because you were caught up on your payments? How much better would you sleep if you knew you were making real progress toward a brighter future? These are the fantasies that can turn into reality. And as we continue, we'll show you how. So let's look at counting pennies. You've made the commitment. It's time to get straight with your money. So where do you start? First, you spend an hour finding the paperwork to redeem the $10 rebate on your new CD player. Where is that darn form? Then you blow another half hour waiting on hold to dispute a $4 charge for a call to Illinois that you were sure you never made. Then you spend an hour poring over your FICO credit report, deciphering all those abbreviations because you read somewhere you're supposed to check in every month. No changes since last month. And then you spend 45 minutes shredding all your trash and unjamming the shredder. As evening approaches, you give yourself a big pat on the back. You just spent the whole day getting the money into shape, right? Wrong. You didn't save any real money, and you didn't make any lasting changes. You just spent a day counting pennies. Sound familiar? You may be thinking that grandma always told you to watch your pennies, so what's wrong with that? Everything, if it takes your eye off the dollars. You have only so much time and energy to focus on money. You need to work, to fix the car, to take care of your kids, or your car, or your girlfriend, and do a zillion other things besides getting straight with your money. There just isn't time to chase down every possible financial detail to perfection. There are only so many money minutes in your day, and you have to spend them wisely. If you use them up trying to save $5 instead of $500, you won't get very far. Professor Warren once counseled a man who watched every penny to the exclusion of watching his dollars. Roberto was a fantastic sale chaser, driving miles out of his way to pick up milk at whatever store was having a special. He also kept the most meticulous financial records, carefully photocopying every receipt, filing every bill, and recording every purchase in his computer. He even went so far as to burn his old records, figuring that he would never ever be a victim of identity theft from some guy digging in his trash and finding a form with his name on it. And you know what? Roberto owed thousands of dollars to the IRS because he hadn't gotten around to filing his tax returns in the last 3 years. He didn't have car insurance, which was illegal, or health insurance, which isn't too smart, and he hadn't saved a nickel for retirement. Every week, Roberto spent hours saving pennies and updating his financial records. But when it came to what really mattered, his financial house was built on sand. So what's the alternative to counting pennies? Once again, we just have to follow the steps. Get all your worth and read it. And we're going to be going over them throughout the shows. Those steps are designed to keep you focused on the important stuff. Your time is precious, and we don't want you to waste it chasing after pennies. And we will help you staying focused on the dollars in the next All Your Worth show. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt-manageable life.